everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And boy, am I glad that the elections are behind us. I don't think I could take another email bombardment from both sides anymore. Anyway, I am also on the other side of the Long Island Food Conference, which I had been talking to all of you about for so many weeks coming up. And I just have to say that the conference was really great. I wish more of you had been there. We had seats still available in the house, and I'm hoping next time we actually have standing room only, because everything that was discussed there was so important, and everybody needs to hear it. Not just the choir that we always speak to, but everybody. One thing Tom Colicchio had said that was just so right on was that we really need to make food issues, food security, a political issue, and we need to get it to the top of politicians' minds in order to really be able to see some change, because right now it's at the bottom. I don't know if it's at the bottom of the list, but it's certainly not at the top of the list, and we really need to get it up at the top of the list. And, you know, as my show goes on, when I invite my guest this week, who will be John Chen, he'll be coming on, he'll be talking about an organization he started called Share Meals. But, you know, it's just talking about people that are hungry, and too many people in our country, our wealthy, rich country, are still hungry. There's just no excuse for it. And yet, until it becomes a political issue, we're not going to really see the change. All of us that are out there doing some good work, feeding people who are hungry, we know we're just putting Band-Aids on a problem. We're not fixing the problem. And if we really want to fix the problem, we have to make it a political issue. And our keynote speaker at the conference was Frances Moore Lappay, who I've shared with many of you before. She is the author of a book called Diet for a Small Planet, which came out in the 1970s. I think I read it in 1973 at the age of 16, and that was the last time I ate any meat or chicken. She inspired me to change my diet back then when she clearly explained that we just use too many resources to produce meat when those resources could be going towards feeding people. And of course, you know, the situation's gotten much worse since the 1970s. And, you know, she just was such an inspiration to me then. And now after hearing her speak, I have to say she's still an inspiration to me even now, 40 years later. Her talk was just amazing. She not only talked about the problems within our food system, about the corruption, the marketing and influence that big business has on the foods we eat, and how our food system also produces more greenhouse gas emissions than all of the transportation methods in the world. But she also talked about democracy and how our democracy is failing us and how we really need to work together to create a real democracy. She calls it a living democracy, and she is one of the, I don't know if she's actually one of the founders, but she's certainly a participant in a new organization called Democracy Initiative. And this is just really a organization to try to get all of these wonderful grassroots that we have out there to come together under one common mission, and that is to promote democracy, true democracy, where every vote counts as a vote, where politicians are not taking money from the wealthy and from corporations, but they are listening to their constituents, they are listening to the people, and they are making choices that are good for the people and for the soil and for the water and for the planet. We just can't continue down the path we're going, because it's just creating such a divide, not just in wealth, but in resources and availability. You know, the statistics that she used were astounding. I think, you know, the 40 richest people in the country own more wealth than 95% of the rest of the people on the planet. Something ridiculous like that. But it's just absurd. And we really need to do something about this inequality that permeates our world and try to make things more equitable. Everybody has a right to good, healthy food. And that's just not the case in our country and the rest of the world. So as people that care about other people, we need to all work together and find ways that we can help turn this around. And I know I am just putting a Band-Aid on a little bit of a problem when I bring people together to feed and cook for the homeless. But nevertheless, I do it because it makes us feel better, and it makes the people who are recipients of our food happy, even if it's just for a moment. So I want to invite all of you, if you have not signed up yet and you are local to the New York area, to sign up and cook with me for Thanksgiving. I don't actually serve on Thanksgiving. It's always the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, but this is my 24th year cooking for a Thanksgiving feast for the homeless. And I partner with a wonderful food pantry called the River Fund New York. And they are the largest food pantry in all of New York City, or I don't know if largest in size, but certainly feeding the most people and caring for the most people. And they're just a wonderful organization, and I've been partnering with them for 24 years now, every Thanksgiving and Christmas, cooking a big meal and serving it to people in Rufus King Park, which is in Jamaica, Queens. And this year is no different. I have a doodle document on my website that you can sign up if you'd like to participate. I sign everybody up for 3-hour shifts at a time, starting on Saturday before Thanksgiving, going until Tuesday when we actually serve everybody. We also do a huge coat drive, collecting coats, blankets, hats, gloves, boots, anything to help keep people warm during these cold winter months, because many of these people, even if they're not homeless, they're in apartments that have inadequate heating and need things to keep them warmer. So please participate. You can sign up online. And I hope to see many of you there. Also, some other great things going on in and around our area that you might want to come to. Fresh Med is a health group that was founded by Dr. Robert Graham, who was one of the speakers in my Food as Medicine panel at the conference this past weekend. And he is having a big healthy party that he's invited all of my listeners to. It's at the Up and Down nightclub on 244 West 14th Street on November 9th from 7 to 9. And it's $20, but he's offering a 20% discount to everybody who's listening, and the discount code is FRESH20. If you don't write it down, it will be on my website too, but the code is FRESH20 for a 20% discount. But it's a dance party with great food and juices, cocktail-infused juices, and a DJ, and it should be a lot of fun. So if you can make it, I hope to see you there. Then the Woodstock Sanctuary Farm Thanksgiving Vegan Gala is coming up on November 10th. That's all day long up at their Woodstock Farm Sanctuary. And there's lots of vegan Thanksgivings going on these days. There's a huge one with Community Solidarity. And if you don't know about Community Solidarity, you want to. They are an unbelievable organization. They have food shares in some of the neediest of neighborhoods, from Bed-Stuy to Hempstead to Wyandanch, Farmingville, South Huntington or Huntington Station. But they're great. They collect food that otherwise would end up in a landfill from Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and Fairways and great markets that have lots of delicious organic food and fresh vegetables, the kind of foods that people need to be eating that otherwise would end up in a landfill, creating methane into the environment. Instead, it's going to people who can eat it and use it. And they have a huge Thanksgiving event that takes place on Sunday, November 18th. And they cook all night long, starting on the night of November 17th. And they cook because they actually serve a hot meal as well. So anyway, if you want to participate, go to the website of Community Solidarity. They're doing just such great work. And if you can't get in a time at my Thanksgiving event when you want to, maybe you can sign up for something with them. But there's so many opportunities to give, and so many ways we can give. You know, find your special talent, find what you love to do, and find ways to give in that. I mean, if golf is your thing, find ways to teach young kids how to play golf, you know. You know, because I love to cook, you know, I find ways of cooking. I just, on Monday, you know, after the food conference was Saturday where I did some cooking, Monday I cooked for the Sierra Club. They were having an adventure film festival in New York City, and I cooked a bunch of food for them. You know, anything you can do to help nonprofits that are doing great work on the ground, you want to participate, because there's just so many places that we can give, and so many of us are so fortunate. And if we have an opportunity to give back, it's just a great feeling. So anyway, I want to share with you my recipe before I invite my guest on. This week's recipe is a roasted curried eggplant and cauliflower dish. And I made this for the Sierra Club on Monday night, and it was really great. So you want to start with 2 cups of diced organic baby Asian eggplant, 1 large organic onion, diced large, 1 medium cauliflower, about 2 pounds or so, cut into florets, 1 cup of diced organic assorted peppers. I also use some of the hot peppers I still have from my garden. 1.5 cups of chickpeas, which is basically 1 can of organic drained chickpeas, 2/3 cup of olive oil, 1/4 cup of red wine vinegar, 1.5 teaspoons of tomato paste, 1.5 teaspoons kosher salt, 2.5 teaspoons of curry powder, 1/2 teaspoon of smoked paprika, 1 pinch of cayenne pepper, and 1/3 cup of cilantro leaves chopped. And you're going to preheat the oven to 400 degrees. You're going to put the cauliflower, the eggplant, peppers, onions, chickpeas all in a large bowl. And in a separate bowl, you're going to whisk together the oil, the vinegar, the tomato paste, the curry powder, the paprika, the cayenne, and the salt. And you're going to whisk that together, and then you're going to pour that dressing over all of the vegetables and toss it really well so that everything is covered in the dressing. And you're going to spread it out on a large cookie sheet, and you're going to bake it or roast it in the oven until it's tender and golden brown. And that takes about 40 minutes to 50 minutes. You really want to let the juice evaporate and have the vegetables be a little bit on the roasted dry side. And you can taste the vegetables, see if you need more salt. And then at the very end, you're going to add in all that cilantro. And, of course, if you're one of those people that doesn't like cilantro, you can substitute parsley. But if you like cilantro, it really gives the dish that special flavor. And that is it. Really quick and easy and delicious. And if you make it, please give me feedback. I love hearing from everybody when you make my recipes. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you John Chin. He's the founder of Share Meals. And Share Meals is an organization that's dedicated to ending hunger and isolation among students. He's also an educator, poet, software engineer, and second Dan black belt, and a social entrepreneur. His greatest concern is how to leverage breakthrough technology to address the human condition in new, disarming ways. His classrooms are often attended by laughter, sometimes so much so that they're asked to pipe down a bit. And he's currently researching the intersection of English education, natural language processing, and machine learning to support better language learning in the classroom. John, are you with me? John? Hi.
Hello?
We're not having a very good connection right now.
Am I shaking?
Okay, that's better. That's better.
That's better. Okay.
Yeah. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. Thank you so much for joining me today. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Share Meals first. How did Share Meals come about? And can you tell us about it?
So Share Meals, as an organization, dedicated to exploring both short-term and long-term solutions to hunger, specifically on college campuses. We started off not
or food I'm at losing all. You again, John. Are you in a bad location?
I'm in the basement of the NYU Engineering School. So.
Well, maybe you need to go upstairs because we're not hearing you very well.
Okay, let me try to find a good spot.
That's better.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Where you are right now sounds okay.
Where I am right now also has 20 people as a captive audience. But how's that?
It's good. I can hear you fine now.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay, so talk to us about Share Meals.
Absolutely. So Share Meals is an organization dedicated to short-term and long-term solutions to college hunger. Originally, we started off as a way to redirect all this extra food and extra meal swipes on college campuses to students who needed them, for students who are food insecure.
And even at colleges like NYU, because that's where you're talking about, right? At NYU, mm-hmm. there's students going to school there that are hungry and are food insecure?
Yeah, there are a lot of students all across our country in colleges that are food insecure. Even at the larger major universities like NYU, like our Ivy League, a lot of people think that just because a school is prestigious and has a huge price tag, that the students who are going there can also afford to properly feed themselves. And that's not always true.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, like the program that Governor Cuomo came up with where he's actually offering free tuition for any student who makes under $100,000, I've heard lots of people complaining that, you know, that's just really helping the middle-class people, the people that are really in need. Still, even if they can get into school, they still have to pay rent and afford food, and they don't have the money for that. And very often, those are the kids that are still dropping out because they can't make ends meet.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the misconceptions is, you know, that the cost of school is just the cost of tuition. And there are a lot of expenses that students aren't aware of, you know, especially when you're moving from a small town in the Midwest out to somewhere like New York City, where the cost of living is incredibly high.
Uh-huh. Do you also have a food pantry at NYU? I know many schools I've been hearing are even starting food pantries on campus to help address this problem.
So we don't. There's been a lot of action from the student side and even some of the faculty side to establish a formal food pantry at our university. And to the administration's credit, you know, we did spend a lot of time and a lot of resources researching whether that would be feasible, but just for so many reasons, it's not. And so we don't have a formal food pantry.
Mm-hmm. So how does Share Meals work then? Can you explain that to us?
Mm-hmm. So Share Meals as an organization, we explore and develop different initiatives to address the problem in different ways. The very first way that we started was we built a website and a mobile app to connect students who had extra food and extra meal swipes with students who are food insecure. We started noticing that students had a ridiculous number of meal swipes unused on their meal plans at the end of every semester. You know, mm-hmm. some students had 10 extra meal swipes or 20 extra meal swipes, but some students had hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And it was ridiculous for me to notice that, you know, we have thousands and thousands of meals that we could give out to students, but we still have students who are food insecure.
And how did you get buy-in from the food service contractor? That's my curiosity, because I remember back in college, they wouldn't even let you share your meal plan with anybody.
So part of it is we got really lucky with our provider right now. There aren't very many restrictions on how you can use your meal plan. So you can swipe in for yourself, you can swipe in for friends, you can swipe in 10 people at once. We're really lucky that we were able to work within the confines of our contract.
And there was no resistance, because I can imagine with hundreds of meals not claimed on someone's meal ticket, how much extra profit these, you know, food contractors are making when they, you know, don't let you share.
Absolutely. It also depends on which contractor we're talking about. So some of the larger ones are actually really active and very supportive of hunger relief and food waste reduction. Sodexo donates a bunch of money and a bunch of resources every year to Solutions on Hunger. And Aramark, which is our supplier, actually started recently doing that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, you know, times have changed, so now it's more politically correct, and so they're hopping on board. But I just remember when I was in school, they wouldn't have any part of that. You know, you were not allowed to share at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been a change. I started Share Meals, and I started being involved in the scene 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And when I first started, there was a lot of resistance. But I think at this point, so many other schools and so many other organizations have been pushing for this that it's actually beneficial for these service providers to jump on board.
Uh-huh. So how many participants would you say you have? And are you solely at NYU, or is this a program now that has expanded to, you know, many schools across the country?
So we are expanding. We're primarily active in the Northeast just because it's easier for us to talk and to gather resources. Our Share Meals app itself currently has 3,500 users. We're pretty strong on 4 to 5 campuses, 4 to 5 colleges. And we're quickly expanding to a lot of the universities in New York City.
Mm-hmm. But they don't. You can't share between campuses, right? It's really just people within the same meal plan. Is that correct, or it doesn't matter?
Well, so when we were doing our research, one of the greatest concerns was security, personal security. We are essentially, you know, taking two students who don't necessarily know each other, and empowering them to share lunch or dinner with each other. And so to do that between universities might pose a security issue. Students might not feel comfortable doing that, but meeting students within your same university is generally pretty safe.
Mm-hmm. So how does it work? Somebody goes on to the app and says, I'm looking for lunch today, who has an extra meal? Or somebody goes on and says, I have extra meals, who would like to come for lunch?
Yeah.
How does it work?
So the app focuses more on sort of like the supply side, the students who want to donate or share their extra meal swipes. It actually works a lot like a ride-sharing app, like Uber or Lyft. You put in your location, your time, and you say, you know, I've got 2 hours between classes, and I've got 5 extra meal swipes. If anybody wants to join me, I'd be happy to swipe you in. And then somebody who wants extra meal swipes can go onto the app. They see a real-time map, and, you know, just like Lyft, where you can see the cars that are around you, on the Share Meals app, you can see the students around you who wants to share a meal with you.
Mm-hmm. That's so lovely. I love this. You know, because also it's probably connecting people with each other that otherwise might not meet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, as a foodie, I always say the power of food. It's like when you gather around a table and you have conversation, just magic happens, you know, just such good vibe happens. It's, you know, and so this is not only taking care of food insecurity, but it's also expanding connections with people.
Yeah, we definitely want to encourage people to share and to form a community. So I've actually been a college professor for 8 years now, focusing specifically in New York City. And in the first couple of years, I would have students like write to me or email me or write down and share in their journals and their homeworks that they were incredibly lonely. You know, the college experience, to some degree, is isolating. You know, you're focused just on your work. You're focused just on your part-time job. You're running from room to room, building to building. And you don't really get a chance to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the Share Meal app, you can sit down with somebody who also goes to the same school. You have some points of connection and commonality. And you can eat and talk and, you know, form these new bonds.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's lots of, I've heard of lots of programs that do food recovery for family mm-hmm. shelters, women's shelters, but you focus mostly just on college, correct?
That is correct.
Now, do you also participate in any of the food rescue plans? You know, like at the end of the day, leftover food that's in the cafeteria. Do you try to harness that at all, or is there another organization making use of that food?
So we do some food rescue, not necessarily from dining halls. One of the big things, especially at NYU, is our club events and our department events. A lot of them are catered, so the attendees can get, you know, as much food as they want, but there's always a lot left over.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first started, there wasn't really any organization that was targeting that food waste. I've witnessed way, way too many times entire trays of sandwiches being thrown out because the event was over and, you know, they had to clear the table.
Right.
So our Share Meals app allows students to alert other students when this happens. They can come and they can retrieve the food and you know, take it home.
Oh, that's great.
We don't focus too much on dining hall waste, mostly because there are already other organizations out there that do that.
Right, right. Well, that's great because you're right. As a, you know, I used to do catering, and you would have so mm-hmm. much leftover. And, you know, getting that to people who could use it in a timely fashion while it's still fresh is always a challenge, you know. And if you're the caterer, you're busy in all the cleanup and all this other stuff that very often that's an area that you just don't have the resources to take care of. So having someone else mm-hmm. come, you know, that's why Island Harvest, City Harvest, those organizations have been able to capitalize on that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess they were not plugging into the corporate dining experience so much, whether, you know, especially at college campuses.
Yeah.
So what are the challenges with this? You know, any downsides with this app that you've been finding?
Well, the biggest obstacles are, the two biggest obstacles are changing user behavior and also changing culture. So the act of sharing meals and the act of like posting on the app that there is some extra food, it's still very much a new activity for students. And we have to work with, a really good core team of students to educate the larger body and then get them into the habit of sharing food.
Mm-hmm.
And the other major obstacle is, you know, there are still a lot of people who believe that food insecurity doesn't exist on colleges.
And what are you doing to raise that awareness? How does Share Meals work with that?
We partner with larger organizations, particularly ones that hold national conferences, and we try to get as many of our students and our administration and our faculty involved as possible. So there's this annual, huge annual conference called Universities Fighting World Hunger.
I'm sorry, say it again. What's it called? University what?
Universities Fighting World Hunger.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I've been going there for the last 3 to 4 years. And for the first couple of years, I was the only person there from New York City. There's nobody else from our region who was involved. And so last year, I pulled together some money, pulled some strings, and I was able to take 5 other undergraduate students from NYU to participate and to become active there. And that sort of like released the snowball effect. So now the 5 that I recruited are now recruiting more. One of them is organizing an alternative spring breaks trip where he gets 10 other students to do some service surrounding food insecurity. So in that way, we're really getting the students involved and getting them more active in the space.
Mm-hmm. Now, at a school like NYU, which, you know, has such a high price tag, do you feel like there's a real division in the campus with the haves and the have-nots?
I think the division is a little bit more due to ignorance is sort of a strong word, but like just being unaware. So the students who don't really have that much money, they usually don't want to speak up about it so other people don't find out. And they also aren't as aware that other students are facing the same problems. And a lot of the other students and even some faculty and administrators, because they don't hear these stories, they're not exposed to it and they don't think it's a problem. So there's a division that can be solved a lot with education and awareness.
Mm-hmm. There can be. So do you have any programs going on to raise that awareness, like actively? Because, you know, I just know how hard it is sometimes to create that change. And like, you know, the snowball effect that you had with the universities fighting world hunger, that same snowball effect, I would think, could take place right on the college campus in raising that awareness.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're really doing 2 things to help with that awareness. One is our brand new Trailblazers Leadership Program. It's an extension of what we did last year with universities fighting world hunger. And we're formalizing it a little bit more. So we're taking 4 undergraduate students this year, in addition with a couple of students from last year, and we're training them on how to do public speaking, how to develop and execute engaging workshops, and how to do research on social issues like hunger. And they're sharing all that information throughout the campus. I'm really excited that this year we're partnering with our International Students Association. Even among the college food insecurity scene, the international students are talked about even less than all the other students.
Mm-hmm.
And so our Trailblazers are partnering with the international students this year to really highlight their obstacles and their needs.
Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, but usually international students don't get financial aid, correct? They really are paying the full ticket price?
Yeah, they usually have less access to financial aid. They also have a lot of restrictions on the ability to work and earn. And there are a whole bunch of other factors, and it's actually worse for them than students who are not international.
Right. Right. Yeah, and you wouldn't think it because because the word on the street is, you know, they have to be coming from money if they can pay the full price and they don't get financial aid, where, you know, someone coming from somewhere else that's just, you know, that doesn't have the same resources, they get financial aid. So,
absolutely.
You can imagine. John, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to know how the college food insecurity position that you have, how you're aligning with other interests and skills and backgrounds. So, everyone, don't go anywhere, and I'll be right back. I'm talking with John Chin, founder of Share Meals, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green. Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm talking with John Chin about the organization he founded called Share Meals, where he's developed an app that allows people to share their leftover meals or their meals that they're not going to get to use by swiping in other students that need those meals. John, you with me?
Yes, I am.
Great. So how does your work with college food insecurity align with your other interests, skills, and backgrounds?
Definitely. So I actually sort of like fell into the college food insecurity scene. 5 years ago, I was really focused on my creative writing, my poetry, my teaching, and I knew nothing about this crisis. And when I first heard about it, a huge swell of passion came up, and I felt I had to get involved. And it wasn't until a couple of months ago where I was interviewing for something else, and the interviewer asked me, well, how do you connect like teaching English and writing poetry with helping to feed people? And as soon as she asked it, it became pretty obvious. It's all about caring about people. You know, as a teacher, I want my students to succeed as best they can. You know, I want to hear about their struggles. I want to hear about their obstacles because I want to solve them. You know, as a writer, as a poet, you know, the stories that are worth telling and worth writing are the stories about people's struggles and their obstacles. And so when I'm working with Share Meals, it's really the same thing. It's how people are dealing with this inability to get enough to eat.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I would assume if you're teaching English that many of the stories that you're reading also are about people's individual personal struggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a while, a big component of my classes were personal journals, where the students could free write about anything. And a lot of times it came up with, a lot of times these obstacles and struggles came up in that writing.
Mm-hmm. And in your work with Share Meals, do you address any of the topics about good food versus bad food or healthy food versus unhealthy food? Or is it just, you know, anything that you can put in your belly to keep you from being hungry?
Yeah. So first of all, we definitely try to promote good food and good nutrition as much as possible. You know, if we're going out of the way to feed people, we might as well feed people, you know, food that makes them healthy and strong. You know, food that we would eat ourselves. And another thing is, the broader definition or the broader view of food insecurity is having access to food that is nutritious. So we do see a lot of college students who are eating, who do, you know, get their 2,000 calories a day, but it comes from fast food, it comes from processed food. They're doing long-term damage to their bodies, and they're also building these really unhealthy eating habits. And so I see as part of our mission to help with that.
Right. Right. How is the food meal plan at NYU? I know, you know, school food, at least on the university level, has certainly improved over the years as the mm-hmm. food movement has grown and awareness for healthier options has been put forth, and, you know, people are demanding better food. How is that impacting, do you think, the choices that students in general are making on the college campus?
Well, I think, you know, I think that movement to demand better food, I think that's helping with the food insecurity awareness issue. So we see a lot of students who are pushing for healthier options, for more vegetarian and vegan options in our meal plans. And, you know, that just opens up the discussion for what is good food, how do we access it, who has the, you know, who should get to eat this kind of food. So there is a lot of improvement, and there is a lot of movement in that way.
Mm-hmm. And a question I wanted to ask about the Share Meal app, is it limited to students that go to the particular university of the person who's sharing the meal? So it's really only open to students from NYU if it's an NYU app versus, you know, Columbia or whatever?
So it's actually just one huge app that silos all the users. So an NYU student will log on to the app, and they only get matched with other NYU students. A Columbia student logs onto the same app, but we make sure that they only get matched with other Columbia students.
How does that happen then? Because I would think, you know, if somebody's taking, you know, is an NYU student, but is taking class up at Columbia, they could go onto the app and see, you know, like in the ride share, see who's close by up at Columbia. But it doesn't work like that? It's not interchangeable?
At the current moment, no. That is a feature that we can definitely explore in the future.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, I think also for security reasons, it's probably helpful, at least now, to keep it where you're just doing it with the students, because, you know, that, I guess, mm-hmm. also protects people from sharing it with people outside of the student body.
That's right, yeah.
Uh-huh. And do you need to have ID to get into the lunchroom? Is that also a part of it, or anybody can come into the lunchroom as a guest?
That really depends on university policy from university to university. I know that at NYU we have about 6 different dining halls, some of which require you to have an ID to even just get into the building, mm-hmm. but some you can just get swiped in by a friend.
Uh-huh. Right. So how do you see this growing, this share meals? Is this something you would like to see become nationwide? How quick do you expect it to grow? What kind of interest are you seeing from other universities?
Yeah. So, I mean, Share Meals experiences the sort of ironic twist that a lot of social impact solutions and companies also experience. We want every university that has students who are food insecure to be able to find some sort of solution to serve them, and whether that's Share Meals or that's any other program. But the perfect world is nobody's hungry and there's no need for Share Meals, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, we get this push and pull where we want to be everywhere where we're needed, but we also don't want to be needed.
Right, right. I don't know if you heard of the organization that I was talking about at the beginning of my show called Community Solidarity. They're just amazing, and they used to just be on Long Island, and now they are also having a food share on Saturdays in Bed-Stuy. And they're amazing. They give out thousands of pounds of food every day at each of these shares, and most of it's organic, all of it's mm-hmm. vegan. And it's just amazing. It's the kind of food that people want to eat. So you know, just for you to, you know, as a professor working with students, if you know anybody who is in need, that's definitely an organization you want to know about and share with your students, because everybody's a partner. There's no, you know, hierarchy or anything like that. Everybody comes and is treated with respect, and it's just, it's a really wonderful organization. So check them out sometime. So how can some of my listeners help? Do you need volunteers? Or is this, you know, or do you take donations? Are you a nonprofit? How does Share, and do they need money? How does Share Meals work in that way?
Absolutely. So we're not a nonprofit right now. We're something called a B Corp, a benefit corporation, just because it allows us a little bit more room and a little bit more maneuverability to make sure that, you know, we're not reliant on donations. We're not reliant on grant money. But ways that your listeners can help out, if they are college students, or if there are parents who have college students, one way is to, like, get involved in the food insecurity and food recovery initiatives on campus. You know, just do some simple research and say, you know, what's the level of food insecurity? Are students at my university going hungry? And if mm-hmm. the answer is yes, then, you know, what solutions are there? And if Share Meals can be a good fit for the needs and for the location, then, you know, send us an email and let's get talking. So that's the primary way that people can get involved. We're also looking to expand our core executive team. So we need things like we need services like legal services and accounting services and all the other stuff that makes a venture, makes an organization run.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a lot of those highly specific, highly professional skills, we'd love to hear from you as well.
Right. Now, Share Meals doesn't cost any money to participate in, does it? Or does it?
So any student can immediately pick up the app and start using it free of charge. We do offer data collection and analytics as premium services for universities. In our experience, a lot of universities just don't know how many of their students are feeding food. And they also have no way or no knowledge of how to get that data. And so that's where ShareMail steps in, and we can offer those services at a premium.
For the university?
For the university, correct.
Right. So for users, for people who are sharing meals or people who are recipients of meals, it's not costing anything for them.
It's 100% free, and you can start using it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Really nice. Really nice. Now, I would unfortunately anticipate that you may have some pushback from parents. Do you? Parents who have paid money for their kids to eat who might not want to see their kids sharing the meals. Have you had any of that?
Surprisingly, we've had zero of that. In fact, we've had some of the opposite. We've had parents contact us and say, I know my daughter isn't using her entire meal plan. I'd love to have an opportunity for her to share that with her fellow students.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I'm going to definitely share information about this app far and wide, and I think, you know, all of my listeners will, because it's a no-brainer. It makes so much sense. I mean, why? The last thing we want is for the food service people to be making extra profit when that can be feeding people that are hungry and it's already been paid for.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes such perfect sense. So what's next for you? Do you see this expanding in, you know, into some other realms as well?
Yeah. So our newest focus is actually supporting college food pantries. both the food pantries that already exist and universities like NYU that, for whatever reason, can't set up a traditional food pantry. And, you know, just like our Share Meals app, we're tackling the problem with technology, engineering, and innovation. And so we're actually building an automated smart pantry that stands in for food pantry. It operates a lot like how an ATM extends the services of a bank. So our smart pantry is just going to extend the services of a food bank or a food pantry.
I'm so not understanding. Can you explain how that would work?
I mean, sure.
Yeah.
So our smart pantries are essentially these giant boxes, these giant vending machines, spread out across campus. They are decentralized. They're automated, so there's no person behind the scenes running it. And students who need extra food can come up to it and receive a box filled with awesome, awesome nutrition.
Uh-huh. And so it would be open to anybody to use then, right? There would be no membership, membership?
It would be open to all the college students for that particular college.
Mm-hmm. And who would stock the pantries?
We would partner with some department or some organization on campus to make sure that those vending machines or those smart pantries are stocked. We are partnering with a national nonprofit that can provide all the food that goes into it.
Mm-hmm. And would food banks also be willing to supply you, do you think?
I think so, definitely. So, like, one of the major, huge benefits that the smart pantry has over a traditional food pantry is it's available 24/7. You know, we don't have to pay to have somebody sitting behind a desk waiting for students to come in. We can just leave these in locations on campus for students to use.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I recently interviewed a young man who started an app at campus where, well, not just at campus, but where you can make appointments to go to the food pantry so that you're not going there and waiting online for hours and hours, but you actually have an appointment to go in and, you know, you go to your appointment at your specific time. And, you know, that was just a great one. Have you heard of that? That's called the Plentiful app.
Yes.
Yeah.
A representative from the Plentiful app was actually at the Hunter College NYC Food Policy Center, one of their events.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was that's a great idea too. And so, you know, I just want to salute you and salute all the people out there that are really figuring out ways to use technology and use this, you know, use the benefits that we have from technology in an innovative way to come up with solutions that really are good, that can help people. So I want to thank you, John, for your work and for getting food to those that need it. It's a problem that I've, you know, watched grow. And, you know, as you probably heard at the beginning, I've been feeding people who are recipients of food pantries for 24 years now. And, you know, I know I'm certainly not at all dealing with the problem. You know, I am really just a Band-Aid a couple times a year. But I certainly make people happy for those couple days. But it's, you know, I just see the problem, and it's heartbreaking. So thank you for your work, and I will spread the word.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And everybody out there, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you all again next week. Bye for now.